Hey, welcome everybody to the episode 12 of the Wonder and Awe podcast. I'm Louis Schwartzberg. I'm going to be your host. I know a lot of you know me from the films I make that celebrate life. I love making the invisible visible by taking viewers on journeys through time and scale, like my recent film, Fantastic Fungi. My work has always combined the how of science and the why of art. And I've always seen Wonder and Awe as that intersection between art and science. And this podcast fills that sweet spot. Because what I've learned from my many years of personal experience in filmmaking is that immersion in nature increases our capacity for courage, creativity, kindness, and compassion, the components we need in order to create a world for life to flourish. That's why I'm proud that today's podcast is supported by the Fetzer Institute. They're helping build the spiritual foundation for a loving world. Fetzer's new study, What Does Spirituality Mean to Us?, reveals how spirituality informs our understanding of ourselves and each other and inspires us to take action for the common good. I'd like to invite you also to share your questions for our guests throughout the live broadcast. Please submit your questions in the comments section of the live stream broadcast. Our team will be reading them, and we'll try to get to as many of them as we can. Just as nature provides us with a connection to something larger than us, playing and listening to music can help us tap into something which is sublime. And today's podcast is going to focus on music, which, like nature, can create pathways to healing. And my guest today has created beautiful music for the world to enjoy. I'm proud to welcome Lindsay Sterling, an American violinist, songwriter, and dancer, to the Wonder and Awe podcast. The Los Angeles-based artist has racked up tens of millions of followers worldwide, more than 3 billion total views on YouTube. Her second album, Shatter Me, went gold after debuting at number 2 on the Billboard Top 200 and number 1 on the Dance Electronic Albums chart and holding the number 1 spot on the Classical Albums chart for 21 consecutive weeks. Her third studio album, Brave Enough, earned her a second Billboard Music Award, Top Dance Electronic Album. Lindsay's latest release, her fifth album, Artemis, debuted at number 1 on Billboard Dance's Electronic Albums chart and has remained on the chart for 15 combined weeks. Artemis has also turned into a successful comic book series, and Sterling co-wrote the New York Times bestselling book, The Only Pirate at the Party, with her sister, Brooke Passay, was a runner-up on season 25 of Dancing with the Stars, which I loved, and I followed every episode.
Oh, fun.
Multi-hyphenate star is currently helping families in need through her nonprofit charity and outreach program, The Upside Fund. So it is my tremendous honor, and I'm so humbled, to welcome Lindsay, who's a good friend and creative collaborator. I am so moved by what you do, Lindsay, in so many different arenas. I think you're a true Renaissance artist because you create music, you play music, you dance, and you create the most visually amazing music videos. So anyways, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, and what a stellar intro. Gonna blush. Thank you so much.
Well, when we met, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, whatever it was, I mean, you were sort of like earlier on in your career. I think Crystallize has 242 million views on YouTube, and you've just mushroomed.
I like it, staying on brand.
Exactly. Or blossomed into people say rock star, but I think it's like beyond that because, you know, like I say, you're the Leonardo da Vinci of modern day art, in my opinion.
Wow. Thank you. That's quite a compliment. Well, I can't believe it was at least 5 years ago when we met, and, you know, it's been really cool to see how we've been able to work together in multiple ways. Like, you know, for those of you who don't know anything about me, like, I was honored that my music is in one of Louis's YouTube videos and in the moving art piece It's on Netflix, right?
Right. The Big Sur episode.
Yes, and then also I've used some of Louis's amazing visuals on my tours to go up on the screens to like help people like, you know, get in the zone. Anyway, so I feel so honored that I've been able to collaborate with you in these multiple ways.
Well, your music, I think, creates a sort of ethereal, soulful experience combined with my nature imagery. And I think that what makes it so special is I think it allows people to go on a personal journey. And I think it gives listeners perhaps a portal to listen to their own inner voice. What do you think about that? Is that true?
Yeah. You know, I think I've always loved instrumental music, and I enjoy being an instrumental artist because I think this also ties into the way that you portray your art is there's no words and there doesn't have to be, you know? And I think sometimes there's some things that like language can't convey, like mm-hmm. truly, like no matter how eloquent we say certain things, like, you know, for example, like loss or grief, like there are no words to express those feelings or to comfort someone. But I think music or like nature or capturing things without words sometimes allow people to feel what words can't express. And, you know, and that's why I think our art pairs so well together.
Yeah. Especially, I think what happens again with lyrics is that it can sometimes, you know, take like a train track, you know, journey.
Yeah.
But when you don't have those lyrics, you're able to go on a journey, but maybe allow things that are like, you know, happening in your subconscious to emerge and to be able to like reflect. Because we're so busy and we are getting hammered, you know, I'm sure we know on everything today with social media and information overload. It's rare that you have an opportunity where you're not being kind of overwhelmed with words flying at you, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I tell you what, let's give people a little brief immersion into the world of your music and a deep dive into the world of flowers. This is an excerpt from the Big Sur video. And so let's play it.
We're laughing to watch all of that.
So I'm curious, Lindsay, like, where does your passion come from? Because, you know, I read that as a child, your parents couldn't afford to give you, like, you know, dance lessons or half lessons for the violin. And despite all of that, you persisted and succeeded. Where does that passion come from?
You know, I mean, I think that from a really early age, my parents just exposed us to, like, art. You know, my parents loved classical music and they'd play it in our home. And I think really I get it from not only just being exposed to it by my parents, but seeing the passion they had for art. Like, my mom was so creative and she could sew all these things. And she taught me to sew when I was a kid. And it kind of, you know, and to this day, I'm still, like, piecing together costumes and, you know, using those sewing skills. My dad would tell me stories when I was a little girl that he had written, and he would, you know, read his, like, scripts to me and my sisters, you know, as bedtime stories. And so I think just seeing my parents' creativity and their passion, and, you know, and especially I got a love for storytelling from my dad. And I think that as an artist, that's actually my greatest gift. Is, you know, I love to storytell, and I do it through a violin, but it's like, then I turn it into, like, a music video that has a narrative, or, you know, on a tour, there's a narrative arc of, like, emotions that I'm hoping people will feel, or a message to take away. And so I really think it all, for me, comes down to, like, just creativity and storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Well, your new song, Lose You Now, I think certainly is a wonderful example of that. It deals with the themes of loss and grief, but also I think can have a healing effect on the listener. And you know, you just mentioned how your dad, you know, was an inspiration for you, but I know that recently you had to overcome the grief of losing your dad and also maybe your best friend. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me, like, how that inspired this song, or how you were able to channel that into an expression of creativity?
Yeah. After losing, you know, my best friend and then my dad, like, within the same year, I used art definitely as a therapeutic tool. My entire album, Brave Enough, was all about being brave enough to feel after loss. And, you know, and so all those songs were inspired by the emotions of grief. And then after, like, kind of pouring all of this, like, grief into music, I wrote a song called Guardian that was about kind of how my grief had transformed into connection. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe so strongly, and more so now than ever, that guardian angels are real. Like, I've always believed in them, but mm-hmm. now that I have two people I love so much on that other side, it's become very, like, tangible to me. And I know my angels and my guardians are around me, like, helping me. And that if I pray for help, they will come. And it gives me a lot of strength when I'm scared or lonely or nervous or, like, don't know what to do. I, like, pray to my guardians for help. And so it was really cool because I couldn't figure out like I said, I'm not the best with words. And so I tried to write lyrics to the song and I just couldn't. So I made it an instrumental. And then the artist that is singing on it, his name is Mako, he actually took the instrumental Guardian and wrote lyrics to it. And we combined the two songs. And I cried the first time I heard it because he's a good friend of mine. And I'd expressed to him these beliefs and these feelings. And so he took what I said and wrote the words that I couldn't express. And it's so perfectly the way I feel. And I'm grateful that he was able to say what I couldn't. And so anyways, I love the sentiment. I love this song so much.
Oh, well, I think after hearing that, we got to watch the video because it is so beautiful. What I love about the work that you do, Lindsay, is, like, you know, you create the music, but I know you have a signature to all of your videos where you're very actively involved, I think, in the production or the design or the concept or the vision of it. They're all mind-blowing. And as a filmmaker, I just, like, bow down to the creativity and the unique, you know, creative production approach you take to everything you do. So it is with total joy that let's take a look at the video.
Yay.
could remember every second we had. I know I tried to count them all, one by one, one by one. But you don't get them back, you don't get them back. Take every memory we've ever had. Oh, I wanna live them all, one by one, one by one. And I swear that I'm not gonna lose you now. I'll keep you in my life somehow. And even when the lights go down, down, I could never lose you now. And even though we're not so close, yeah, maybe you could pick me up still. Cause I can't stop falling down, I can't stop falling down. And I'm not gonna lose you now.
Wow, incredible.
Thank you.
You know, in the video, we got the imagery of monarch butterflies and that little fox doll. I'm wondering how these connections to nature or the doll remind you of those you've lost.
Yeah, one thing that was like special about making this video was that's full of Easter eggs, like all kinds of little things that, you know, probably only will ever mean anything to me, but like, you know, the butterfly, and they were symbols of like multiple people, even though this story is very much so about like the relationship with my dad. Right. Like the monarch butterfly is like a symbol to me of my best friend that I lost. Like, he had these beautiful tattoos on his arms and there was these big butterflies on him. So whenever I see a monarch butterfly, I feel like I'm being visited almost in a way, or it's just like Gavi's around. The little fox, several months or like just a few months before I shot this, my sister, her newborn baby passed away. And that little fox was representative of this little fox toy that was always in Sasha's crib. And so like, whenever I would think of Sasha, I'd think of her holding that little fox. And so that was in honor of her. And then so many of the memories are actual like kind of pictures in my mind that I have snapshots of my childhood with my dad.
Wow. Well, you know, I think we can all really relate to it, whether we've lost someone recently or not. I mean, during this period of COVID, you know, I think one of the worst things we're going through is this feeling of disconnection from each other, from friends, from family.
Right.
I'm just curious. Do you hope listeners might take away that kind of, you know, resilience from watching the video or listening to the music?
I hope so, because I didn't want this song to feel heavy. I wanted it to feel light, even though it is about, like, in a way, it is about grief very much so. But I wanted it to feel full of hope.
Right.
You know, hope in the fact that the things we go through, you know, that become our past, that we can still take them into our future, even if they feel like they're just in the past. Like, they could, you know, whether it's like me believing in angels, or whether it's like loss can mean all kinds of things, and grief comes in all shapes and forms, from like losing careers or losing dreams or losing love, you know, like, and so many people are feeling loss, you know, and grief for many different things. And I think that just, you know, at a promise that someday there will be hope again, like this feeling of hope can come from this grief, like it will eventually get there. And, you know, and I know that whenever I'm in the midst of grief, it's impossible to feel like I can feel light and hope and happy again. But that's what I hoped this song would give people, is just hope that you will get through the grief process.
I think that I think it definitely works on that level. It certainly made me feel that way. And this whole idea of having hope and courage on the other side, I think is totally exemplified by the acrobatic performance you did on your 2020 holiday special, where you performed, I guess you were inspired by Cirque du Soleil acrobatic.
I was.
And you literally hung by your hair during a performance. I watched the video blog, and you had a lot of challenges along the way. And every time you teared up from the pain or the challenge, I started crying as well.
Oh,
can't help it.
You know, empathy pain. Thank you.
Well, it was, you know, it was beautiful to see the journey, but also, as you know, as a creative artist. But I think it speaks to me on a much higher level. It speaks to me about, you know, the journey of life. You know, how you do have these challenges that you have to overcome, and these hurdles, and, you know, this, how you dug deep and found that inner strength to be able to take it to the next week, to take mm-hmm. it to another week of practice, where you're going to, you know, now I'm over the pain of hanging by my hair. Now I got to actually dance and play music, and I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. I really admire you for putting out that example, because I think it's a wonderful, inspirational message for people, regardless of what they're going through, to be able to do that. You know, when I watched the video blog, I wrote down a couple of things you said, which I really have to share. As a matter of fact, you know what I'd rather do? Let's watch the video. And then, let's just watch the video. And then I want to share what some of the things you said about the process of making it, okay?
Okay, let's go there.
Let's do it. Thank you. Wow.
I'm sweating. I'm actually sweating. It like makes me have a visceral reaction watching it.
So share with us, like, I mean, what did it take to do that? I mean, there's so many questions I have. I mean, the spinning, are you dizzy? The stomach muscles to hold your, you know, body like that, to be able to also withstand the pain. I mean, when you ended it and you're breathing, I love that moment because, boy, I would have like yelled or something or just collapsed immediately, but I could feel you letting out that. What did it take to prepare and to, you know, go through that journey?
Yes. You know what? It was the most mind over matter thing I have ever done in my life. Like when I first decided I wanted to do it, you know, I found a teacher, which was really hard also to find a teacher. And they told me there's a specific hairstyle that will like support the weight. And for some reason, I thought that meant that it would like make it less painful. Like if you did your hair in the perfect specific way and, you know, so we did it and I hooked in for that first time. And I just remember my eyes got super wide when I just bent my knees and put a little bit of pressure on the hair. And I didn't even like lift a fraction of my weight off. I just felt a little bit of weight go on. And I looked at my teacher and I was like, I think we did it wrong. Like, I was like, is it supposed to feel like this? And she's like, yeah. She's like, it's really painful. And she's like, but you just have to know that you will be okay, that your scalp, because I was like, it feels like my scalp is going to rip off of my skull. You know, it's like terrifying. And it's terrifying to lift that weight off. You just have to trust so much. And she's like, you just have to know that your body is stronger than you think it is and that you can do this. Your scalp will not rip off. You have to trust. And, you know, and I thought, okay, I made it through that first, you know, finally on my like third lesson, I lifted my feet off the ground and I realized that it was a process every single time, I did it for 3 months to train. And yet every time I'd hook in, I'd put a little pressure on and I'd have that thought in my head again, this is impossible. I can't do this. And I'd have to remind myself, this is about trust. This is about knowing that I've done it before. And so I can do it again. And I think that's a very, for me, a powerful life lesson that like sometimes we face pain, we face hardship and we think, I can't do this. And we have to remember that we've done hard things before. Things have felt impossible before. Like the first time I picked up a violin, it felt like, how on earth do you do this? This is impossible. And you realize that the feeling of this is impossible is not a wall. It's not the end. It's just the first few steps of any journey is, of course, it's impossible. Of course, you've never done it before. And, you know, and I've done hard things before. And so whatever it is, emotional pain, physical pain, I can get through this too. Like I joke that someday I'll be giving childbirth and I'll be like, it's fine. I hung by my hair. But yeah, it was excruciating time and time again. It never was not excruciating the whole time. But one other lesson I learned is that beauty can be found even through pain. And I remember when my dad was passing away, one of the most like emotionally painful moments of my life, we were all sitting around him, my sisters, my mom, you know, my brother, all of us. And we were just like watching him. He couldn't, you know, communicate with us anymore. The cancer had like taken everything from him. And so we're just waiting, knowing he's going to go at any moment. And it was just the most painful moment of my life. But one of my sisters said, maybe he can hear us. I don't know. She said, let's tell our favorite memories of dad. And so we started. And before we knew it, we were laughing and we were crying. And it was one of the most intense feelings of gratitude I've ever felt, because while I was seeing what I was losing, I was wrapped up in memories of the beauty that I had. I had this lifetime of memories with the best dad and memories that made this family together. And so in a very different way, when I was hanging by my hair, by breathing through it, by knowing that I could do it, as I started to dance and spin, once I'd like get in the motion of it, I would feel beauty and I would feel power and I would feel strength even amidst the pain. And so I really do think that they can go hand in hand in multiple ways.
Yeah, just it's intense feeling, I suppose, is what they both are.
Yeah.
And one opens up your heart in many different ways. You know, the pain and the suffering we feel opens our hearts, right? And then when joy and happiness comes, it can also make that even a deeper, more fulfilling experience. So
yeah.
So when I watched your video video blog, is that how you say it? Video blog?
Vlog.
Vlog. I just jotted down these words, which I thought was really beautiful and inspiring, especially since we're going through this situation now with the pandemic. I'm sure all of you are going through your own kind of pain right now. It's been a hard year. I've learned time and time again that joy can be found even in trials. That courage and faith can be found through fear, and gratitude can be discovered by our losses. Every time you say to yourself that you can't, that it's impossible, I want you to remind yourself that you can, that you have done hard things before, and you are strong. We are all so much stronger than we know. Powerful words and inspiring words, I think, for what we're going through currently. So, yeah. You know, I think that what also, you know, touched my heart is the fact that, and I've heard that there's studies about this, so that people who are grateful are able to bounce back faster from hardships, and that they are actually more resilient than people that don't appreciate things or, you know, have some form of worldview where they're grateful for things. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you get, let's say someone just, you know, dented your car, you know, in the parking lot. Well, for some people, that could be a bummer that could last for a couple of days. Other people could just shrug it off and say it's no big deal, you know? And when even when bigger things and harder things happen, studies have shown that people who practice gratitude bounce back quicker. And yeah. I think it's really, they kind of go hand in hand, you know?
And yeah, I love that. And it's, I feel that is so, so true. And I think one of the things I like that you said is when they practice gratitude. And the thought of like practicing gratitude hit me a while ago. And every year I choose one word that's like my word of the year, rather than, I mean, I'll make New Year's resolutions, but my main resolution is I'm going to work on this attribute. And 2 years ago, I think my word was gratitude. And so I decided I'm going to practice gratitude. I've always heard that it's a practice. So I was like, okay, how can I practice? And the simplest things like writing in a gratitude journal morning and night, you know, and doesn't have to take 10, you know, it doesn't have to take a ton of time. Like I spend right. just a few minutes and write a few things down. And it really is true that it's made gratitude more of an automatic response, because I practice it every morning and every night. You know, and whenever I would get, you know, start to be like, oh, you know, focus on negative, I'd be like, no, let's switch. Like, let's change the mindset. And at first it was very much so always, it had to be a choice. But as you like kind of exercise the different parts of your brain, that's kind of your go-to path. It's the path of least resistance. It's the path that your mind starts to automatically use because it's one you've been like training it to use. And I'm such a believer in training our minds to become the kind of mind that we want to be. And so when you say practice gratitude, it's like, no, like it isn't my natural state to be like constantly gracious and always gratitude. Like, I don't think it's a lot of our natural state,
right?
But it's become my more of like my automatic response in a lot of situations, not all the time. No. I definitely am not like the, you know, the perfect gratitude princess, but it's been amazing to see how much happiness it added to my life by doing that simple task. And so like, I just want to say, like, I'm such a proponent of that. And I loved your video on gratitude, and that I watched it right before this podcast, and it was so like, well, you were, what were you saying about it? That some people use it like every day.
Yeah. I've had a lot of comments, especially young people, say they use it as a video alarm clock. They use it as a practice every day to align themselves. And yeah. I think it's a great reminder, because, you know, we're actually, I think, hardwired from our reptilian survival mode that, you know, everything is like, you know, fight or flight and, you know, mm-hmm. react. And even when good things happen, we don't savor them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like on to the next problem, on to the next thing, you know. And so it does take mental discipline to be mm-hmm. able to hang in that happy moment, or
yeah.
in something that you can be grateful for your health, grateful for the fact that you've got five fingers that move. I mean, there's so many little things you can do. And I think what I've kind of discovered, it's like the hard drive in your computer. It's like, if you fill it up with good stuff, there's actually no room for the bad thought to enter, you know, because you're either going to be, in that space of gratitude or in the space of being, you know, disappointed and anxious and all the things we feel. And again, I'm far from being perfect. And when I ever feel down or disappointed, rejected, I just think about that one word of gratitude to kind of pull me out of it. What can I be grateful for in the moment? There's always something I can find. And once I do that, it stops my tailspin into this like negative hole that it's easy for us to fall into. Very easy.
No, absolutely. And like, I can't even say enough. I like tell everybody, I'm like, you should have a gratitude journal. You know, I just feel like it actually, I don't know, it's one of the simplest things I've done that's given me the biggest difference in my life. And you know, and it is interesting that I don't think it is most of our natural state. And I don't know, I used to just look at my life and be like, well, this is the way I am. Like, you know, this is just how I am. But it's like, oh, anything we want to, you know, any attribute we want to attain, like we can practice it. We don't just have to be like, this is the way I am. Because nature versus nurture, we know, is very much at play all the time. Like,
yeah.
We're partly the way we are is because the way, you know, we were raised, and like a million factors. And so if we could learn it once, you know, to be this way, then that doesn't mean we can't like retrain ourselves to be more gracious, more optimistic, more like, you know, more in tune to what other people need. Like all these attributes that I like used to just look at other people and be like, oh, she's so patient. Like as if she was just born that way. It's like, no, I'm sure that they developed these things.
Right. And, you know, I don't have a quote unquote meditative practice. People go, oh, Louie, you must be so patient. You know, you shoot all these like time-lapse flowers all the time. It's not patience. It's just, I enjoy the process. It's a discipline, just like it's a discipline to learn how to play the violin. You know, it's something you have to do all, you know, every day. And what it really is, I think, is trust. It's trust that if I set up the shot a certain way, I hope in a couple of days, the flower is going to open up in frame and be in focus, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wow. So many things.
Kind of like leaning into the future and having faith, you know, again, like what you said, maybe that you have these angels that are like, you know, supporting you and saying, yeah, you're on your path. And, you know, this is, you know, something you should be doing because, you know, the idea of like, you know, meditating, closing your eyes and breathing, I find that to be kind of boring, to be quite honest.
It's hard.
It's also really, really hard. I understand it's a discipline. I'm not putting it down. But I think for active people, it's hard to switch from, you know, jamming the way we jam into then all of a sudden going into like a closet in the dark.
Yeah.
So for me, this idea of gratitude is easy. Because
totally.
I can think of just one word, and I understand that it takes mental discipline to be able to just think about things that I'm grateful for. And whether you do a journal or whether you just, you know, think about it in the moment, it does pull you out of the natural tendency to be complaining about things that aren't going the way you want them to go.
Absolutely. No, for sure. And I think that we can all meditate in our own way. Like, it's such a word that people see as a very specific practice, but it's like, I sometimes feel like when I used to run, like going on a run felt kind of meditative for me, or like there's a million different ways, and like a gratitude practice. And so I think that mindfulness is just like what works for you. And, you know, I like how you were saying that sometimes it is about just trust that, like, you know, if you set up the shot that it will turn out the way it is. And it's like that hope that you, your skills are like preparing you to do this. And also I'm reading Brené Brown's books again. I love her. She's like my favorite author. And Daring Greatly is my favorite book of all time. And I just like that she talks about, it's a lot of times just knowing that failure is like, when failure isn't an option, creativity gets stifled. Right. Courage gets squashed because failure is not an option, you know? And so it's like, well, why would I try? Because I don't know if the flower is going to come perfectly in frame or be like perfectly focused. And if I'm going to beat myself up for every failure, like I'm never going to try anything. And so giving yourself permission to like do things wrong and mess up. And when you fall down, say, it's okay. I'm going to brush myself off and I'm going to get up again and try again. Like permission to, like, failure is such a, has such a bad connotation to it, but in pure definition, it's just, it didn't work. Like, it didn't work this time. And so, like, let's try again. And like, I'm sure you and I both have faced probably more failures than successes, like, it's all about like, you got the shot. I'm sure you set up way more shots, you know, than, like, I don't know how you feel about that, but I feel that way.
Yeah. Well, it's, the ratio of success and failure with the flowers, it can be like really 1 out of 10, to be honest, to get a really great shot. And it takes a lot of time. You know, I've been doing it for 4 decades. And, you know, in total, I have about maybe 16 hours of film.
Wow.
From 40 years of filming. Because it takes a long time. You only get like 2 seconds per day. However, wow. There's also a high failure rate.
Yeah. You
know? Because how do I know where the flower is going to be 2 or 3 days from now? I don't. Yeah. And what the shape it will look like or whatever it is. I enjoy that. It's kind of like surfing the wave. It's like being in the right spot, in the right place, anticipating the fact that you're going to catch the perfect wave. Mm-hmm. It's a mental chess game in a way that you play. Every time I walk, when I'm not filming, I'm always imagining, where's the perfect light? You know, even though I'm not shooting, I'm just observant and mindful of the light coming through the trees. And if I had a camera with me, where would I shoot it? How would I frame it? Yeah. It's a game, but it's also an artistic mental discipline to be learning, even on a walk. Mm-hmm. I'm learning about what light does. I'm learning about composition. I'm always learning and practicing so that someday that information may be valuable.
Yeah. And I'm also loving that you just have learned, or you just do love the process, you know, like it's because so much of life is about the process. If all we're focused on is the goal, like, you'll never be happy, you know, because the process is like 99.9% of everything that everyone does. You know, and if all I cared about was when like music video release day, the moment that it gets released, if that's all I, you know, or when I step onto the stage, like if that's all that I found joy in, I would hate my job, you know, I would hate being an artist and a musician. But it's like, no, I've learned to love, like, all, like, there's certain parts of the process, of course, we both don't love, but for the most part, like, I wake up and I'm excited to participate in the process of all these different things. And, you know, and that, I don't know if I would have expected that, because originally I just wanted to get on stage and I just wanted to do the music videos. And then it's like, oh no, you learn to like find joy in the moments.
Yeah. It's so true. It's certainly not the spiking the football in the end zone. It's like marching down the field as a sports analogy. But no, I think once you find your path, you'll never lose your way. And it's knowing that you're on the path, your own special path, that I think, you know, gives, it fills your soul. One of the things I find that also is healing and good for your soul is, you know, the music that you create. And, you know, there have been studies, I think, that show that playing the violin can have positive effects on your brain's capacity for memory. It can also help you with reading, language processing, attention span, and emotional well-being. I'm just curious to learn a little bit about what's your relationship to the violin, and I know you found it to be your voice, but do you see it as a way of really being, in a sense, a healing modality?
I mean, are you talking about for like myself?
Yeah, for when you play it, and perhaps the benefit that it might give to people that are listeners.
Yeah, I definitely feel like when I'm not doing it for work, like moments when I just want to play and I just let myself play whatever I want to play, because very much so the violin has kind of become a part of my work. It's my job. It's like a lot of times I'm playing for a very specific purpose and I got to learn this song. But sometimes when I do just get to like play, that's when it can sometimes become very just almost meditative for me. Mm-hmm. And then I will say there is a gift that I feel like I get given sometimes when I am on stage, and it doesn't happen every night. But sometimes when I'm playing, and it's usually during a slower moment in the show, but I'll be, you know, when I can look into the eyes of the people in the audience, and I feel this intense amount of connection to the people that I am playing for, right. You know, and like, I see the way they're looking at me and I see them so clearly, like, oh my gosh, that person, like these people, that person, I see them so beautifully. And it's a beauty that just goes beyond like what appearances. It's like, oh my gosh, like everyone is so special. And I feel it so strongly in those moments on stage. I obviously haven't felt it for a while, but it like makes me tear up. And mm-hmm. I'm so grateful for that gift that I only feel when I'm on stage playing my violin in front of an audience. And it can even be a tiny, like little audience at a radio show. You know, I've had these moments where I'm just like, I love people and I love everyone in this room so intensely because I'm connected to them through the healing music.
Yeah. Well, you can certainly feel the energy. And I think that, you know, there are studies that say that music can lower, you know, cortisol in the body, you know, reduce heart rate, blood pressure, stress levels. And we get so many comments from our audience that nature imagery calms them and can help people that are suffering from anxiety, depression, cancer, even an end-of-life diagnosis. I'd like to show maybe another little short clip from the Big Sur video that's got a little more of a mellow vibe to it. And let's talk about it afterwards, how it can be a cathartic experience for people. Wow. I don't want to use an overused word like spiritual, but I really feel your music is so spiritual or transformational, you know? At least that touched like the deepest part of my soul.
Oh, thank you.
And we have gotten so many comments saying that, you know, it helped people that are, you know, struggling on some level. And so anyways, I know that you also have a nonprofit where you're reaching out to people and doing the same thing, really, with your attitude about gratitude. Actually, the only, if you believe in gratitude, the only attitude about gratitude is that every gift, I'm sorry, the only attitude about gratitude is that if every experience is a gift, then the only attitude is gratitude. I finally got it right.
Love it. No, that's great.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Good.
So tell us a little bit about the Upside Fund and, you know, what you and your organization are involved with, okay?
Yeah, no. So it actually started several years ago where after I, you know, spent Christmas in the hospital with my dad, you know, I started every Christmas since then helping people pay their medical bills. And that's kind of how it started. And, you know, then when COVID hit, I was just so overwhelmed because, you know, although I was like, oh, my tours got canceled, so, you know, so sad about that. But I was like, I'm so grateful that I'm okay. And my family's okay. And, you know, and then I like kind of went to like my circle of people I work with and made sure, okay, everybody's okay. And so then I thought, well, the next community to reach out to is my fan community. Like they're the people that have made it so that I am okay right now. And so I reached out to them and asked if they were okay. And I officially turned, you know, this, what I'd been doing, paying people's medical bills around Christmas time. I turned it into the Upside Fund where we just help families in need and we just give money and it, you know, and I reach out to my fan base because I loved this thing I heard years ago in actually a church talk where it, you know, the guy was saying, we all need to lift where we stand. And if we lift where we stand, we'll all be okay because there's enough people in every spot that can, like, if this person is feeling weak right now, they can help lift them and vice versa if the tides change, you know? And so the idea of just lifting from your own communities and then we're all going to be okay. So, and it's been really cool within my fan community to see that fans have started to donate to the cause as well. So the Upside Fund is a place where, you know, people can go to give if they feel like they have enough to support and give, and then people can also go to receive help. And it's been really, really cool to make it something that is just kind of universal like that. And, you know, I've seen fans posting that they were, you know, they were doing like a garage sale to raise money for the Upside Fund. And it's just, it's really cool to see how much of a community it's become where, you know, like I said, we can all lift.
Yeah. And I love the fact that you do have this really kind of close, intimate relationship with your fans. I remember when I met you, you know, years and years ago when things were just starting, like Instagram, et cetera, and how you know, actively, you know, answer and respond to all your fans and all your followers. And it's so authentic and it's beautiful that you've really built this community of like-minded souls.
Yeah, I love having that, you know, and they've been there for me through so many things. And, you know, through this time, I've realized how much I've missed being able to connect, like, you know, through meet and greets and through shows, like with my fans. And so it's been fun to try to find new ways, you know, whether it's through the Upside Fund or like I'm starting an online book club this week where I'm going to stream live, like a book club with my fans. And I'm, you know, just finding different ways to not only just connect, but to like be uplifted by each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are reading Brené Brown's book because it's my favorite book and I wanted to read it again. So, you know, just through, it's been fun to find unique new ways rather than just focusing on like what I don't have, you know, focusing on, well, what can I do, you know?
Right. On what you do have.
Exactly.
So what do you have? I think you're hoping to maybe have a tour in the fall, if all goes well. Oh, who's your cute little partner there?
This is Luna, everybody.
Luna.
She just heard the doorbell, so she's like, what?
Well, that's the most popular name now with dogs, too, I think.
I know, right? I really do think it is. If someone told me the other day, it's the Ashley of dog names. And I was like, I would name my dog the Ashley of dog names, but it's okay. It's the perfect name for her. She's the sweetheart.
So if people want to find out about, the tour, if it happens, they should just go to lindsaysterling.com to learn more about it.
Well, the tour dates are up. The tickets are still on sale. They're still selling. So I'm, people are hopeful that, even the industry is hopeful that we might be able to, to do that. So fingers crossed. I think we'll know pretty soon if, with all the vaccines going, I think that soon we'll know if that's going to happen. But as of now, we're planning on it.
I think it will. It was good news. Like, every day news seems to be getting better in terms of, the vaccine and all the things that are happening. So with that note of hope, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, Lindsay, for inspiring me and millions. I mean, millions. How about billions of people? No, really, you are remarkable. And I love the fact that whatever you tackle, you're a perfectionist, as am I. So I can really admire the pitfalls and the blessings of that. And that, you're able to combine dance, music, art, cinematography into your art form. So you are really, really special and more than that, a real beautiful soul. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me today. It was such a delightful conversation to just, talk about things that are really meaningful, So yeah. Thank you.
My pleasure. And so I also wanted to thank our sponsor, which helps with our broadcast a little bit, the Fetzer Institute, helping to build a spiritual foundation for a loving world, and our producer, Sean, and also Leland, Annie, Courtney, and Sarah for Moving Art, Bethany, Ron, and Deanna for Magical Threads. We're in this, stormy day today, raining here in LA. But I think after, having this conversation with Lindsay, I'm very hopeful and optimistic that there are solutions coming out of the pandemic that we're in right now and the situation of being disconnected. This, I think, has been a good moment for us to go in deep inside of ourselves and do some reflection and give us a chance to reboot so that we can go forward and all work to creating a sustainable, beautiful life for life to flourish. That's what we all want.
Amen to that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.